The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Bigger Fed rate cuts are sparking excitement. The market playbook resetting to lower rate outlook. And tech spinning and sputtering, but man, catching a fire after that rate cut. Oil gets a lift after crashing through key support. And our guest today is Steve Sanders, EVP at Interactive Brokers. All this and much more on episode number 887 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And we have another great show lined up this week. Thanks for joining in the fun. Oh, it's been fun. I'm Andrew Horowitz. As you know, I'm the founder of an investment advisory firm. Goes by Horowitz Company. And you know, things are getting interesting because we could tell. We could kind of feel it because we know that people are, when they're starting to get concerned, worry, change their minds about their outlook, or even getting really excited about the future prospects for their investments, for their business, for, you know, their overall long-term situation, there's a definitive feel to it. How? How is that? How do we feel that? Well, actually, being in the business, we see a lot of things that happen, right? A lot of emails that come in, a lot of questions that come in, a lot of comments. We see a great deal of, I guess, more activity, questions, new clients coming in during the turning points of the markets. And that's what is happening. We can see that there's a lot more interest. And this has been happening over the last, I would say, a couple of months, but more so, it's accelerating. And sometimes we can, I guess, get lulled into the flow of markets, the ebb and the flow and the moving and the grinding higher and taking off a little bit. But when there's chop, it awakens us, gets us kind of a slap in the face from that slumber. And August and September are the reasons that I'm looking at that. Because what we saw so far in September, but definitely in August, to a degree in July as well, was this real negativity to start. This rotation that took everything out for a moment, and then all of a sudden, people started piling back in. And all of a sudden, people are interested in, you know, every single time that the markets go down, they buy back in. Every single time we see a sell-off intraday, they're buying back in. Long tails, we call it, when it comes to candles on a chart. And a lot of this is due to the economic backdrop, the political backdrop in the U.S., the geopolitical backdrop around the world. And then what we saw, of course, was the Fed stoking the fire. The idea that, you know, for the most part, the economy is in good shape, but they are amped up. They're looking at the reasons to cut, and why not? One of the big things that's going on, obviously, that we know right now is we have an enormous, a humongous, a outsized, a historic level of debt that's out there. And with that, what has happened is that it makes it much more difficult for the Fed to think about keeping rates high because the U.S. government, of course, has to pay the debt service. They have to pay the interest rate on the newly issued bonds. And if they're issuing short-term bonds at the high levels that they are compared to what they were on an inverted yield curve situation, well, that's a problem. So what they want to do is bring that down because that does help the government. And government then can lighten up on their overall spending and maybe set the stage for the next level of who is coming into office because of the tax cuts and the payments that they're going to provide, whether it's going to be stimulus, whether it's going to be some kind of benefits, whether it's going to be lower taxes here or whatever it may be. The fact is the Fed is very cognizant of the fact that there is a need to free up some flow because the probability is that there is going to be some kind of stimulative efforts by either party that will get into office. And that being the case, they have to ensure that that our debt maintains a very high degree of rating from the rating services, and the dollar, you know, maintains its reserve status, And if we were to be in a situation where we have high rates, high debt service, and tax cuts along the way in the future, the probability could be that some of the rating services would do a cut. Many people that were buying would say, hey, the hell with this. We're looking outside. So where to now? What's going to go on now? So the main thing that we're looking at right now may be the, what you think to be, or many people, is the bond portfolios, the fixed income area, the maturities and duration, because we need to have a game plan if this is truly going to be the next cycle as the Fed embarks on rate cuts for the foreseeable future. And yes, a lot was priced in, but depending on how the economy fares, we may be in for, I would think, some additional movement ahead in the rates department. The Fed has talked about that right after the rate cut announcement, too, on Wednesday, just a few days ago, to where we are in the next few months, talking about a 230, how there's room, there's slack, there's ability for another 50 basis points. But from my perch, it looks like the Fed may risk some upside to inflation in order to help with what they are saying as these economic concerns. In fact, there's the potential, not a real hardcore problematic area, but I think there is the real potential for a reignition of some inflation, perhaps. And it's intriguing how the Fed chose to move 50 basis points, especially given all the economic conditions that we see at this time, right? And despite what we would all agree to be a slightly slowing economy, I think we have to agree also at the same time, it's not in dire shape. So such an aggressive cut raises several questions. And one of the things we looked at, of course, is the market's reaction. On the day of the rate cut announcement, it was all over the place. The next day it moved up. And obviously we know what happened moving forward. But the reaction right after, that's what I'm really concerned about, what I like to look at. And right after what we saw was the 10-year yield bouncing from the 3.6% rate right before the announcement to 3.75% the next day, right after that. And that signals that the fixed income markets may have been ahead of themselves a bit. Now, one interpretation of this is the Fed felt pressured by market expectations. That's what I'm thinking. I think that they were significantly out of sync with the current yield curve. And that suggests that the Fed may have acted to avoid, I guess, a further dislocation between market sentiment and its prior path of policy, where it was, you know, fighting inflation and all that, and it needs to now catch up to that. It needs to catch up to what the policy path should be for the future, and they want to do that ahead of time. And that small pop in the U.S. dollar after the announcement also points to investors probably thinking that there's a more cautious outlook on future rate cuts. They did talk about being data dependent, meaning, you know, to go meeting by meeting, of course. Now, at Powell's press conference, he was trying to clarify why they did this 50 basis points and why there's this lingering uncertainty moving forward over the next few months about why another 50 basis points cut may be on the table. That adds a lot of complexity to the markets right now. He's kind of supercharging the markets by trying to bring down rates, of course, for all the reasons we talked about, trying to somehow lock in, I guess it's a lock-in feature, that's what it is, on a soft landing, I guess is what we could say there. And it shows while the economy is slowing, inflation pressures on the financial markets could be likely influencing the Fed's decisions beyond just the economic fundamentals of what we see. I think they're really trying to focus in on being able to spike the ball, say that we have the soft landing, and the hell with the inflation numbers right now. Let's make sure that the jobs numbers don't get any worse because they were softening. Not terrible. We talked about that, I think, with Frank Curzio last week. But right now, what is the big issue, I think, is the ability to say that we were successful in this master experiment that we started back in 2008 and really reignited into an incredible move in 2020 for the grand experiment of just doing monetary and fiscal policy, and markets are happy and people are happy. And now we could see probably housing prices move up a little bit and sales start happening again, refinancing happening. Maybe things like boat sales will pick up again, and we'll see that consumers are more willing to. As long as they feel comfortable with their jobs, lower rates are going to be very helpful. So I don't see any reason to do much in terms of some crazy moves on portfolios right now. But one of the things we are doing is, and we waited specifically until after the rate decision to see how things play out. One of the things we're going to do is readjust our bond portfolio holdings for our global allocations, for our investology. And I think that's going to be really a smart move. A lot of things related to the currencies, a lot of things, how they're held, what how, you know, whether the fixed income is held in local currency or in US dollars and hedged back. Those are areas that may seem like, so boring. But I think those are areas that are right now key to keeping portfolio values in a really good level and opportunity for the future. Opportunity, there are lots of areas right now, and right now post this this move and the new playbook that we're going to institute for clients. I think it's a really good time to consider for yourself how you're dealing with your fixed income portfolio, which again, maybe something you just like to sit and let us do nothing. But lots of interesting things happening right now. Now moving to our guest. Our guest today is Steve Sanders. He's the EVP or Executive Vice President of Marketing and Product Development at Interactive Brokers. And he oversees all marketing product development efforts at the company and introduced Interactive Brokers' low commissions, advanced trading technology, breadth of products worldwide, advanced way to individuals and institutional investors globally. And he's joined Interactive Brokers way back in 2001. I track all of what they do, and this is why I want to bring on Steve today. So Steve Sanders, hey, how are you? How was your summer?
I am just fine, and my summer was great. Lots of travel, new grandson.
Well, congratulations. It was perfect. Perfect. You know, I find when I've been talking to people, friends, everybody, clients, there's a lot of travel this summer and a lot of travel to Europe.
Yes. I would think after COVID, you know, people sitting in their houses, they now want to see the world.
They're still back. I found Europe very cheap when I went this summer. Did you have the same experience?
Actually, you know, our timing was perfect because the kroner was in our favor just at the point that we went to visit.
Perfect. So you're buying all sorts of. What does Norwegian have? They have whales. They have
lots of cod.
Cod, yeah.
that's where to go.
I think I had moose head soup in Norway when I was there.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Maybe not for everybody.
I don't think I tried that.
No? Oh, you're not missing anything.
If I go back, maybe.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Trust me, just take my word for this, that there's only one of us that had to try that. Unnecessary. Right. An unnecessary thing in life. So I love having you on because you give us the pulse of the industry, but also I track all the updates and things that are going on at Interactive Brokers because a lot of different reasons, obviously, but we have clients there. We have a lot of clients there. And, you know, I specifically want to look at all the initiatives. And look, I've told you this before. There are so many different things that you have at Interactive Brokers that you do that, you know, not everything, we know this, not everything's for everybody, right? Some people may trade stocks, some people may trade futures, some people may trade options. I mean, and then there are some people that may do research and they may use charting. Some people may use fundamentals. But what's really interesting, and nobody's forced to use everything, and I don't think you even expect everybody to use everything. But you do come up with some amazing items and things that people can use if they want to. And that's what I think is so incredible about IBKR, that you're never, it doesn't seem to me that you're ever satisfied with just the status quo. Am I wrong?
That's absolutely correct. We've always been about innovation, whether it's new products, new technology. You know, that's how we keep our edge.
So one of the things that I know, there's some things that are newer, some things that are not, but I'm not going to go in any particular order, but I have a list of things that I wanted to go through. For example, the overnight trading. And that was something relatively newer, I suppose. But one of the things that I know from a statistical standpoint about Interactive Brokers is that there is tremendous, and we have a big international audience that listens to the show, but is this number right? The 85% of Interactive Brokers' new client applicants come from outside the U.S.?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. The reason for that is our universal account, where you can deposit a multitude of different currencies, and you can go in and you can trade around the world with that. So if you're sitting in Hong Kong, you can deposit your Hong Kong dollars and either convert that into USD at the best possible rate or take out a margin loan against your Hong Kong dollars and trade Google stock. So we have always made it very easy.
Very easy, by the way. Can I just confirm that? Like ridiculously easy.
Okay, thank you. So because we've made it easy, I think we're really the only game in town that is a truly international broker. And there are lots of people around the world that want to invest around the world. And so that really is our main target audience. And that is why we have over 85% of our clients now coming from outside, new applicants now coming from outside the U.S.
So what's interesting is just to tag onto this. So we have clients that come in from, you know, pick your place. But you talked about Hong Kong a second ago. So let's go there for a second. So if a client that comes in with, equivalent of $100,000 in Hong Kong dollars, and they may want to keep their dollars there. If you did this, for example, at like a Schwab, for example, or pick your poison of other ones, and I use a lot of different brokers, you know that it's impossible, can't be done. I mean, it can be done, but it's very, very difficult. This is so easy.
Yep. Okay. So what happened a number of years back? The Schwabs and the TD Ameritrade started getting out of the overseas markets because of the expanded AML and compliance. We doubled down on our investment in terms of AML systems and compliance systems and automated it all because we felt that it was a competitive advantage for us, and we stayed in those markets. Most of the other U.S. brokers have exited. They don't really advertise there.
Or they have it as a separate business entity entirely.
It's a separate business, but certainly they're not putting a lot of resources into it. And I think you may be able to call them up and do a trade in an overseas market, but it's certainly not on a single platform, a single screen where you can just pick your market and trade away.
Yeah, AML, just for those that are not familiar with some of the inside wording and vernacular, it's all about money laundering. And it's anti-money laundering protocols to make sure that money coming into the account is not being flushed out. So in other words, people that can't just deposit and then move it out. So that's a tough thing. I mean, especially for a U.S.-based, you know, you have to do that extra amount of work. But the thing that also happens with that is that now you have people in Hong Kong, which are on a different time zone, and while they may initially have wanted to trade, let's say, futures that trade 24 hours around the clock, right? Well, that was easy enough, but the liquidity is a lot less, of course, in the overnight hours. But what about all of a sudden they want to trade? Hey, wait, like you said, I want to trade Google. I want to trade, Caterpillar. I want to trade Exxon. Well, all of a sudden, now what happens? Well, they either have to change their entire lifestyle and stay up when it's dark and go to sleep when it's light, or the overnight trading is something that you put into place also. And I guess one of the things, the stat that I saw was that since the end of 2023, but this is kind of new, so we're starting from a low base, the overnight trading platform, I guess trading and all, increased like 450%. So it's now about 2.5% of all U.S. trades, which is interesting because I would assume during the initial, when you initially put this out there, I'm assuming that liquidity was a little light. And does that change a lot?
Yeah. So overnight trading has been tried a number of times over the years, and it always seems to fail. And the reason it fails is that there just aren't that many people, you know, up at 2 a.m. in the morning in the U.S. trading away. So what made it different for us this time is, as we spoke about before, over 85% of our clients come from outside the U.S. and many in Asian and European time zones. So this is their daylight hours. And because of that, we seem to have gotten a good amount of interest in it. We'll have to continue to monitor it and see if the liquidity continues to grow. If there isn't enough liquidity and the spreads are too wide, you know, it's not worth it for a lot of people. But as I said, given that we have this client base outside the U.S., we think the prospects are pretty good. I will tell you that there is always a spike in interest when an event happens during the night, such as, you know, what I think it was in August with the Japanese market meltdown, and we saw a huge increase for the few days after that. In fact, there was such demand that one of the other ATSs, wasn't able to handle the trades for a few days. We have two. We're hooked into both Blue Ocean and our own ATS, so we were able to continue to accept trades during that period.
ATS, what does that stand for?
Alternative Trading System.
Yep. So that's the overnights.
Blue Ocean.
Yeah,
it's an exchange-like entity. Blue Ocean runs one for overnight, and we're hooked into them, and we're hooked into our own. But certainly when there is an overnight event in another jurisdiction, there's a lot more interest in trading overnight.
So now you're 24 hours a day most of the time, 5 days a week. Do you think there's ever going to be a potential for, I don't even want to say it, but a 7 day a week market? 24/7/7?
I guess I would ask the question, do huge events happen during the weekends?
Always. Well, right before 3 o'clock on Sundays. How about that? 3 o'clock on Sunday before the futures open.
3 o'clock on Sundays. Right. And that's certainly why the futures markets open at 6 p.m. on Sunday evening. So, you know, I guess my thought is if something's happening in the world, there is that potential, but I think it's best to start with the 5 days first and see where that goes.
And I question whether the futures market is open because of events that happen on Sunday or the events that happen on Sunday because the futures markets are open.
That could very well be.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Maybe people want to be out on their boats and golfing on the weekend, so no events will happen.
So I think actually it's interesting because I think that, you know, the crypto market's open 24/7 all the time, never closes and all that. Great, good. Yeah, that's great. You know, they complain about, the banking industry's not open. I don't know about you. I can get money at any ATM 24/7, 7 days a week. I can send you money right now. You can send me money. So that whole argument and that discussion is irrelevant right now. I believe, just like I believe that the reason that the football players have an off season is they can get back in shape, take a break. The body can't take this all the time. Is those two little days that are off for the markets helps us just take a breath and rejuvenate.
And I agree with that. And I probably apply that to the politicians out there also.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully they take off a couple of days here and there, but they don't.
Right.
One of the things that I've been chewing on for some time is another initiative that you put out relatively recently, within the last, I don't know, month and a half. And that is the forecast contracts on I guess, economic and climate indicators, right? So you started this back in August, and basically this is, this doesn't, there's not every country around the world has this, but you can do things like forecasting events or levels and looking at the outcomes, whether it's economic or climate, and using that to, in a way, either, I guess, invest or hedge. But can you go through this a little bit more so we can get some clarity on this?
Sure. So there's really two innovations with this new endeavor of ForecastEx contracts. The first one is the structure of these contracts, and the second one is the underlying. So let's talk about the structure first, right? So the way this works is that you come to our site, forecasttrader.ibkr.com. And you will, if you have an account, you'll log in and you will see the cost of, you know, a contract. So maybe one of the contracts is on the CPI, and they come in yes, no questions. Mm-hmm. So the question is, will the CPI, Consumer Price Index, be above X at the time of the announcement? Right. Mm-hmm. So you see a couple of prices on the screen. The yes is 55 cents and the no is 45 cents. And let's say you take the yes contract and it does go above that at the end, you'll get a dollar. So your profit is $1 minus the 55 cents that you paid out to buy the contract. And the people who voted, bought the no contracts, they're out 45 cents and they don't get a dollar. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the structure of this is very simple. You can't lose more than you invest in this contract, and you see it right on the screen. And at the end of the period, you either get a dollar or you get nothing. So that's the first innovation, the structure of the contract. The second innovation is the underlying of the contract. These are underlyings that have never been offered by the CME or anybody else in terms of contracts. So certainly there are you know, crude oil futures and S&P 500 futures, but there is no contract on the consumer price index or whether the average global temperature is going to go above X, as of a certain date. So that's the second component of this that is new and innovative.
Now,
certainly, we're waiting to see, because the courts ruled, first the CFTC said we couldn't do political contracts, and then the courts ruled we could, and then there was an injunction. So we're waiting to hear whether we'll be able to offer political contracts. If we can, we're able to start up right away. We're hoping to hear something today, but it could lag on.
So, but are these tradable, or is it just...
Yes. Well, not the political contracts, the economic and the climate change contracts are tradable today. You can come on over and trade them with us.
Can I move before the end of contract? Can I close the position?
So the way to move, the way to get out of it is, let's say you buy that CPI contract for 55 cents. You would buy a no contract that offsets it, right? So if things were moving in your direction, then you'd sell the no contract. It would be cheaper, and that's how you would make your profit.
Right. Gotcha. And
Buy the no contract.
Right, and then you just wait for them both to expire and hopefully just make the money on the other
one. Well, we'll net them right away.
Oh, you will net them? Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Now, how is this, now let's turn this from a short-term binary outcome device to how an investor could use this, because I think that's the whole point, right? The whole point is to also utilize this somehow as an investor within your portfolio structure.
Right. So certainly you could use them just to take a view. You feel very strongly about where the CPI is going to be in a month, and you take a view on it and you invest that way. The other thought is that you could use this for hedging purposes. So if you felt that your portfolio was subject to moves in the CPI or subject to climate change indicators, then you can use it as insurance to hedge your portfolio.
Hmm. Interesting. So moving along, so you have all things related to consumer discretionary real estate is how many total economic contracts are available? Like what the different ones?
Oh, let's see. So I think at launch we had about 16 of them, and we continue.
So we're talking about like manufacturing, real estate numbers. We're talking about inflation numbers.
Yeah, but when I give that number, and I'm just going here to take a quick look. When I give that number, that's on the underlying, just like with a an option.
Yeah.
There are different strikes, so there are different CPI things. Uh-huh. But it looks like this has grown. Again, if you go to forecasttrader.ibkr and click on the markets tab, you can see this. And there's probably about maybe 25 listed here now. So we continue to increase the underlyings, and for each underlying, maybe seven or eight contract strikes listed.
And there's date. They're also date related.
And they're also date related.
So I can have, let's say, a CPI is going to be 2% in, I'm just picking a date, July of 2025, as an example.
That's correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
That's interesting. So, and
in fact, we just started adding, or Forecast X just started adding. When we first started this up, it was just the U.S. But if you go to our site, you can now see that we're offering things around the world. For instance, will the Singapore overnight rate average for September 30th, 2024 be above 3.25%?
That's something that I think about all the time.
I know you do, and in fact, you could go in and you could think about this anytime you want and put in the investment.
Forecast Trader is the name of that. It's a cool innovation, because I think what's also interesting about it is I think you can get a pulse of where people think things are going there, right? So what we have right now is we have. Let's say an unemployment rate at 4.2%. Let's just say that, right? Okay.
Right.
And we know that we have analysts, or sometimes we call them analysts, that come up with, what the expectation is. But in a way, if we have a market that is liquid within the forecast trader, as I say it at least, tell me, I could be totally wrong about this, but it seems that we have another way of looking at expectations of what is actually going to happen with that particular number.
That's right. As you said, we have analysts and we also have polls out there. And, somebody calls you up and it's free to give an answer. With this, if you have a liquid market, people are actually putting their money into their beliefs. And it's my thought that when it comes to money, people are probably more serious about what they would say. If their capital is at risk.
Put your money where your mouth is the point.
That's exactly right.
All right, let's talk about, you have something I talked about at the top of the show was now that we have a little bit of a different rate regime coming in, even though the markets were well ahead of this, probably a little too far ahead of it, but well ahead of this idea that the Fed is going to be on the desired path of reducing rates for a lot of different reasons, some that are not so apparent and some that are, some that, as I talked about right at the top of the show, that, you know, they want to reduce the rate down so that the U.S. government bonds are paying less or debt service is lower, especially into an election where both parties are going to be spendthrifts. Okay, put that aside. The second thing is, I'm making the assumption that we all agree with this, but you may not, but I'm just talking about this.
Right.
And I talked about how we're recalibrating some of our bond offerings. Why now? Well, because we want to wait. You don't want to do this way ahead. We already have bond positioning in. We want to wait till we get the absolute green light, thumbs up, that this is going to happen. And things can change, but we wanted to do some work on maturities, duration, credit risk, et cetera. Now, you have a bond offering at Interactive Brokers. Actually, you know, aside from the ETFs, the mutual funds, but you also do, obviously, and domestic, but you have a global bond offering. So once again, in your desire to keep people up all the time at Interactive Brokers, there's a 22-hour-a-day trading of international bonds, which includes U.S. Treasuries, which is a very liquid market, right? That's always been liquid. That's liquid throughout the evening too, isn't it?
That's correct.
And then you have the European bonds, government bonds.
Right. Well, when we say, I just want to back up on that. When you say liquid, and certainly treasuries are more liquid than other bonds, it means there's always an offering, but, you know, with some of the bonds, because there's so few of them, you know, the prices, you know, they're not moving in real time. It may happen, you know, every other day or something.
So, but you open the overnight, or the, I guess, at 8, and you close at 5.
Yeah.
So it's 3 hours a day, it's closed. From 5 to 8.
Yeah.
Why that? Why is that?
Because there's no market makers on the other side.
Like early, too early in the morning and too late in the night.
It's to the, you know, as you said, everyone deserves a breather, right?
Even bond traders, I see.
even bond traders.
Yeah. So the thing is that you have a huge platform of bonds. One of the things that's really interesting is that you can, because I know this, so we do it. We can look at the prices of the bonds on, you know, all sorts of things. Let's stick to treasuries for a second here, or corporates for that matter, or munis in the U.S. And you can do comparisons. You can actually put offerings on that you want to pick up or sell, and that can go through. Or you can actually do that with other IBKR clients, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. But the one thing I'll say about the bond market, it's not like stocks. I mean, with stocks, there's one Google, right?
Right.
So there's a good concentration of it, and you know, trading around the clock. There's you know, as we see, there's some interest in it. So you know, there's some liquidity there. With bonds, I mean, if you think about, you know, Google bonds, there's lots of them, or munis, there's millions of them, right?
Yep.
I mean these things just don't sell as often.
But that's why you have but that's why you have the system where you can put your offer out there. You can put your interest
that's exactly right. So what I generally find, because I use it to buy munis for myself, that you will find little scraps in there. You know, people want to get rid of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And if you go in, you could get some pretty good prices. It's just that if you're looking for a huge size, you know, you may not find as much of that there.
Yeah. So with regard to the bond side of things, is that a big part of IBK? Is that a big part of what you do, or is it more?
Well, we're certainly unique at it. You know, nobody really, in you know, that I know of, offers as big of an inventory as we do. And certainly, you know, we attract a lot of clients for it. Is it an actively traded product like stock or options? No, it is not. So you're not going to see as many trades. But I think everybody, you know, a portion of their portfolio, they want to invest in bonds. And if they want to go in there and they want to use our bond scanners and bond filters to find the best rate out there for the period of time or the duration of the bond that they may want and the credit rating that they may want, then it's a very important offering.
Yeah.
So is it an offering that we make huge revenue on? No, because there's just not as many trades. Is it something that is extremely useful to our clients when they have the need to, you know, maybe buy a bond? Yes, it's very important to them.
So let's skip over to something that we haven't really talked about much. It's an interesting area. I'm kind of curious where it is today from where it was, let's say, a couple of years ago. And it's ESG. Because when it comes to stocks, you have a very nice, I'll call it a dashboard. Is that a good way to describe it? A dashboard for ESG? It's a really cool dashboard for ESG. It tells us, you know, are they polluters? Do they have good social contracting? You know, are they have good overall corporate governance? And you give it a score and a rating as well.
Yeah.
So is that something that has been with kind of the new age, right? From where we were 2 years ago to where we are now.
Yeah.
Is that something that is still as popular?
So, you know, all the tools we put out there, you know, we put out, you know, for the use of our clients, and we think of it like a utility. We certainly never make recommendations to our clients one way or another. They're the ones who should be making, you know, decisions on which tools they want to use or which tools they don't want to use.
Mm-hmm.
So ESG was put out there because, you know, there are some people out there that wanted this tool. And it's been out there and, you know, it certainly works well. I will say within the last couple of years, maybe it's not, as big a fad or as big as important to people as it may have been 2 years ago. But I would say if this is important to a certain segment of our clients, we have the tool there where we continue to, you know, build it out and make it good and robust, and you know, we have no plans to remove it. So it's there for anybody that wants to use it.
Yeah, and talking about dashboards, just to get back to this, something that's also really cool is the Fundamentals Explorer, because it's tabbed, it has data, it gives you ratios and earnings information, it gives you valuation things that you use for valuation purposes. You know, that with the charting, I mean, there's not much left out of the equation, I think, in those two things when you're looking at technical and fundamental backdrop for a stock or for an index or whatever. Well, not an index that has much fundamentals, but for a stock or information about, let's say, mutual funds or ETFs, I mean, inside that whole fundamentals area conceptually. Is there any expansion happening with that at all?
Oh, yes. We continue to add to that. I think what makes our Fundamentals Explorer unique, I mean, certainly there are lots of tools out there. You can go to Yahoo or Morningstar. But what really makes ours unique is that given that we offer stocks all around the world in many, many countries, that our Fundamental Explorer is international in nature, and that anything that is sitting on our platform that you can trade around the world, that you can pull up that information in real time, you know, before maybe you're going to make a trade and view that information no matter, you know, where that stock may be traded.
So I don't know if this is something that when you and I went back and forth some emails about, hey, what's some things that we could talk about? And I make my list. But one of the things you talked about was the RIA, the Registered Investment Advisor Summary Results. I don't know if do you want to talk about that? There's some interesting things there to bring out? I mean, I guess there is.
Well, certainly RIAs are a really important segment, a business segment for us. We continue to build out the tools for them. So, you know, Portfolio Analyst, our portfolio management system, is a very big component of that. It's free. We recently added at the beginning of the summer a retirement planner. We're going to be adding a budgeting tool in the near future. So for any advisor that wants to have nice glossy pictures of their clients' performance, it's free and it's there, and it allows the advisor, if the client has bank accounts or broker accounts at other brokers, to consolidate it all up. So that's one thing we've been focusing on. We have a free customer relationship manager, CRM, you know, akin to Salesforce or Redtail, that is built into our registration system, and we continue to upgrade that. And
does that actually, I'm sorry to interrupt, because yeah, I don't know this answer. Does that link up to like Salesforce, or is it standalone?
No, it's our own.
Okay.
It's our own. Gotcha. That's built in, that is built in, you know, there's no fee for it. You know, the benefit of it is that it's directly hooked into our registration system. So if you need to see where an application is for a particular prospect, or if you need to look up, you know, the activity of a client, you can easily do that. You can sort. There are lots of different things you can do with it. And as I said, it's integrated into all our custody systems and everything else. So, you know, it's kind of out of the box.
Well, one of the things you've actually done for RIAs is made it very easy to do trading, because you have the ability to create groupings of clients. So let's say we have, I'm just going to pick a number, 25 clients in this model and 50 clients in that model and 120 in that model, or everybody's all together, doesn't matter. And you want to say, hey, I'd like to buy 20% more of my Apple holdings. I'd like to increase the portfolios. So you can click a button. It will block trade, allocate to everyone immediately. Whereas in other custodians, you have to actually go and either have an outside system to do this or spend half the day on that one trade.
That's right. And we also have a rebalance tool that will rebalance out the portfolio. So that's a good point. And many of these more advanced tools that were just built into the Trader Workstation, there has also been another endeavor to build that out into our HTML-based advisor portal. So that, you know, if you don't want to log into our Java-based TWS and do these allocations, you can now do it through our, you know, HTML-based advisor portal.
Just more choices.
Certainly, depending on, you know, how you want to trade, but certainly advisors are important to us. Yeah. We listen to what they want, and we certainly try to build it into our platforms.
Yeah, good stuff. The other thing is you've also been expanding your... Again, I guess it's because you have so many non-U.S. or, you know, outside the U.S. or global clients coming in. You're expanding your global market and product access in the area of futures contracts and things related to derivatives in things like Malaysia.
Yes.
Where's the biggest growth you're seeing? Like what? Any particular country or sector, or not country or sector, but a country or region?
Well, there are two sides to this. One is the product side, the other is the client side. Right. So in terms of the product side, you know, it's always been our policy, if there's an exchange out there with liquidity, we're gonna add it, because we just want everything. that's kind of who we are. So, you know, Malaysia was a market where there was some liquidity, and we recently added in those futures. We probably have almost everything, but if there is a missing market, you know, that, as I said, it has liquidity and it's a fair place to trade, then we're probably going to try to build it in. From the client side, you know, it's kind of like Field of Dreams. We built out our universal account that allows you to deposit funds in a myriad of currencies. We advertise we're there, and we hope that they'll come from, you know, all over the world, which is over 200 countries and territories where our clients now come from.
Yep, great stuff. Steve Sanders, Interactive Brokers, traveling man around the world, as well as working the entire time and coming up with stuff that's new and great and just innovative, I would say, and state of the art. So thank you so much for all that you do. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Andrew. And I'll just add to that, there's a huge team at Interactive Brokers that I'm privileged to work with that are doing all these
things. Hold on a second. So. You're not doing all the thinking about this and the programming?
No, I'm
Wait sir, a second. You're bursting my bubble, dude.
I'm certainly not. That's part of what I love about working at Interactive Brokers, the professional, sophisticated team that we've built up over the years.
That's great. Great stuff. Well, thanks for being there and thanks for doing all that you do.
Great. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks. Great stuff from Steve Sanders. That's going to wrap it up for this edition, this show, this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me as always. If you want more information on some of the things that we talk about and make sure that you're on the lists and mailing lists and all that, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Also, if you want to leave a review, that's always helpful. If you want to see what's going on, make sure to subscribe over at iTunes or Apple Podcasts, they call it now, and Spotify and Amazon and iHeartRadio, and the list goes on. So whatever you choose as the place that you will like to listen, go do yourself a favor and make sure to subscribe and do us a favor at the same time and leave a review. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you again real soon. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.